Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Happy Monday, everybody. And yeah, we'll do the fight song roundup. And I'm sure we will play this merry tune on the fight song roundup. But we had to start with it this morning as well. It, of course, is the Vanderbilt fight song. And after what Vanderbilt did, we could just do 2 hours of this fight song on repeat. Because that was mesmerizing. And I have to say, Jeffrey, I'm not sure all of your predictions have done all that well all this year.
We had a good week.
That's good to hear. But the prediction that you made Wednesday or Thursday when we first started talking about this weekend of college football was, you said, yeah. I said, it's not a very good weekend of college football because the only ranked versus ranked was Missouri, Texas A&M. And you said, oh, but this is the kind of week you're going to look back on and say, remember when all hell broke loose? And sure enough, nailed it. Five out of the top 11, of course, losing to unranked teams, including most notably Alabama. And here locally, the Tennessee Vols lose to Arkansas. Fines are in, Jeffrey. Vandy has to pay $100,000 for the goalposts coming down. And now, by the way, the money goes to the victim. Did you know that?
I did not.
The money goes to Alabama.
Glad to see them catch a break.
And Arkansas, because it's a second offense.
Vandy was a first-time offender.
Arkansas stormed the court against Duke when they beat Duke. And so this was a second offense. So $250,000 for Arkansas. Fine for Arkansas. So the fines are in. The joy will last all week, I'm sure, on those for those fan bases. And we have a whole lot to talk about. It was an extraordinary weekend of college sports. So busy, in fact, that I may not even get to mention the Bills game. I did want to start by acknowledging it is, of course, October 7th, the anniversary of the slaughter of more than 1,100 Israelis and hundreds more taken hostage. More than 100 have still not been returned. That, of course, unleashed a war, a campaign that has seen, by various accounts, more than 41,000 Palestinians killed. And so, without getting into the merits of it one way or another, obviously a heinous, hideous day a year ago, and tragedy has happened in the wake of it, much like 9/11, and then all the deaths that happened in the wake of it. And I just mourn. You know, I can have bad days. But, you know, I saw an interview with an Israeli mother whose son is still a hostage. And she said, the world has moved on, but for me, it's still October 7th, the same day. And then you see the children and, you know, being bombed and dying in the Middle East and Gaza, and it's the whole thing is just absolutely and it feels so damn hopeless. I have to say, it feels so damn hopeless. You know, I was listening to an interview recently, and the only people who quote unquote talk about a two state solution are, you know, dopey optimistic Americans. It's not talked about over there as even a thing, evidently. So I mourn for everybody touched by it, and hope for something that looks like something closer to peace. And then, in addition, here locally, Jeffrey, we have Milton Brewing off the coast of Florida. And in fact, the truth is that the USF, where the Memphis Tigers are to play on Friday, has already shut down classes, and is going to be operating remotely through the middle of the week at least. And then we will see what happens. There is no news as of yet on how it might impact the Memphis football game, but that is something that bears watching. Of course, more important is people are still recovering from the terrible effects of Helene, and now to have Milton plowing into to Florida in addition, and so thinking of the folks down there. It has been a tough time for a lot of people, and I'm thinking of a lot of people. In fact, Fishman, it's unclear where exactly it's going to hit. He booked a hotel. His mom, is down there, and so if she's without power, they're totally – so he booked a hotel room for her on the off chance. But anyway, thinking of folks in Florida, it has been a rough time there. So we begin – obviously a joyous weekend or a remarkable weekend of college football, and there's all kinds of things to talk about, but I did want to start there. How was your weekend, Jeffrey?
Oh, it was a good weekend, solid weekend.
I had the most Memphis day ever, just a glorious Memphis day on Saturday. And when I went hiking in at Shelby Forest, we got up and we went for a hike in Shelby Forest, which is absolutely beautiful. 3 mile hike in Shelby Forest. Then we went to a art fair in Evergreen, which was just delightful. And then someone gave me tickets to Mempho, and so I went to Mempho Saturday night. Now, mind you, I spent some of the time in the there was a sports tent. there was a sports bar tent. And I did. I was not leaving for Mempho until that Vandy Alabama game where it was over. I saw the Roots Saturday night. So it was just a magnificent Memphis day. Absolutely great Memphis day. Other folks celebrated the Blue and Gray Showcase Friday night where the Tigers played. And then the Grizz open practice on Sunday, where, in addition to everything else, Jeffrey, we got news that trickled out to Chick-fil-A, FedEx Forum.
Head into the Forum.
Chick-fil-A.
And more importantly, we're now Coke. We're going to be a Coke facility.
Coke and FedEx Forum. Jalen Wells wins the skills competition. Zach Edey and Luke Kennard won the three-point shooting competition. It was Edey and Kennard beat Bain and Laravia. Some of you skeptics about Zach Edey three-point shooter are going to have to apologize. Okay, no.
I think that's not true. I think that's, Luke might have had something to do with it.
That's not true. But anyway, it was an unbelievably busy weekend of baseball and everything else. All right, let's start with the Grizzlies. By the way, play tonight, exhibition game. Preseason game, I guess you call it. Preseason game at Dallas. That's tonight. Vandy.
Yes.
That was fantastic.
I mean, there was always the question coming into this year. It's like anyone that's watched CUSA knows what a delight Diego Pavia is to watch play football. Like he's just one of those like absolute gamers that you just find yourself, impressed by. But I kind of thought when he came to Vanderbilt, it's like, well, Vanderbilt's going to rub off on him. And that's just not the case. Diego Pavia is rubbing off on Vanderbilt.
The of the various stats, hadn't beaten Alabama in 40 years. That's a good one.
Yep.
Right? Last two games before this one, beat Vandy by 100. I like that one.
My favorite one is the... they scored 13 points in the first quarter, and they had 13 points.
The last 4 years against Nick Saban teams, they scored 13 points total.
Correct.
And they had 13 in the first quarter. And then, of course, you had Vandy historically 0-60 against the top five. Absolutely astounding. So I tuned in toward the end of the first half, and you're like, okay, this is very plucky. They're at this point, they're leading 23-7 when I tuned in the first half. And I'm like, this is very plucky. I wonder how they're going to lose this, right?
Yeah. Like, what will the final be? Like, the question is going to be, what would the final be? Would this be, like, would Vandy, you kind of still thought Vandy was going to lose? Although I would say this, I think this was interesting about watching the game. In my gambling group chat, we all had Vanderbilt plus points.
Right.
And so then there was the question right before the half, should we just take Bama live to win? And all of us kind of looked at each other and were like, I'm not sure they're going to win. Like, if you said like yes or no,
right,
I guess I would say yes. But like, we were all very hesitant. Whereas normally this would just be like, just hammer it as much as possible, and none of us felt that confident, primarily because Alabama was not really stopping Vanderbilt.
Well, what is astounding about this? There are so many things. The fact of it is astounding about it, of course, but then if you look at it more closely, the thing that was really astounding about it is that this didn't require, you know, a torrential rainstorm, two pick sixes, a kickoff return where, you know, this wasn't like, I hate to say it, Memphis beating Tennessee where a disputed kick return was his knee down. You know what I mean? It was, yeah. It wasn't anything like that.
Vanderbilt got two first downs in the last drive to salt it away.
Well, I want to get to that. I thought the 4th-and-1 touchdown pass was just nuts. That was just nuts. And by the way, he was about to get smashed.
Oh, no. Diego blacked out this game.
It was nuts.
And probably post-game, too.
And then just kind of bounced off the fingertips in, and Junior Cheryl pulls it in. So then you're thinking, well, all right, now it's 30-21. But I confess, when Alabama scored to make it 40-35, I just assumed, I did, hand up. I assumed they would kick off, Vandy would run it three times, punt, Alabama would go down and score, and you'd say, that's Vandy.
Yeah.
That's what I assumed. Instead, that on that second down, that throw down the sideline, I mean, ballsy as hell, beautifully executed, they couldn't stop them. Alabama needing to force a three and out, or even a 6 and out, for God's sake.
Yeah, I mean, they just needed to get a punt.
It felt like
if they got the ball, they were going to be able to score.
Get a punt. Alabama couldn't force Vanderbilt to punt. Unbelievable. 22.5-point favorites. Just insane. And then all the joy that ensued, including the goalposts going in the Cumberland, and have now been fished out of the Cumberland, by the way, so they can be chopped up and can be souvenirs for any and all. And what's interesting, I mean, so from the Vandy perspective, like, huge win, obviously, maybe the biggest win in history. Clark Lee, after struggling as head coach, decides, screw this growing Vandy players thing. He brings in 22 transfers, including the quarterback, 51 new players between freshmen and transfers. The new OC, obviously, from Mexico State, Tim Beck, along with Diego Pavia.
And Jerry Kill should be also be noted, because that guy's a great football coach.
And the tight end is great. Like, they it was a magnificent day. And you do wonder what this means. In the end, you look back at Vanderbilt and you think, you know what? They should have beaten Missouri. You know, they should have, Georgia State, they lost to Georgia State.
Yeah.
Obviously did beat Virginia Tech. It's a decent Vandy team. Pretty clearly, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that was kind of the other thing that stood out. you could tell Alabama had more elite players, but this what was striking about this game to me is this is the first time I felt like Alabama and Vanderbilt played, and it didn't just feel like a complete and utter mismatch on the field. Like, you could tell one side clearly had better players, but it didn't feel like when you normally would watch Alabama play Vanderbilt, and you're like, these two, this is not safe.
So this raises the question of the impact of the transfer portal.
Yeah.
Right? And Nick Saban had said that the rich are just going to get richer. You're just going to go and be able to pluck the best players from mid-level schools, and you're going to get better and better and better, and it's going to be devastating, and the rich are going to get richer. What we're actually seeing is, if you're New Mexico State, this doesn't make you happy. You know what I mean? Like, the poor aren't getting richer. You know what I mean? Like, the poor are not getting richer because they're losing really good players. Are the mid-level getting rich? Like, what, is there a flattening among the elite and the folks who are within power conferences? Is there a flattening?
So my kind of working theory is that what he's saying is true if you're looking at it in terms of winning a championship. So what I think we've done is we've pulled back the distance between the creme de la creme and the middle class. But the problem is when you're playing a 12-team playoff, whatnot, like the middle class is still probably not going to be able to win that many games. And so the advantage is still going to go back to the Ohio States of the world, the Georgias, the Alabamas. But on a week-to-week basis, the gap has shrunk.
It is interesting. It feels like the poorer schools are still getting hammered, right?
Yep.
But, like, you look at programs like Miami, which had suffered, mm-hmm. right, which had been struggling. They go out and get Cam Ward, right, from Washington State, which was, you can't be happy about that. You look at Indiana. Indiana gets a quarterback from Ohio U, right?
And players from JMU.
And players from JMU.
Yes.
So it's the Indianas. I mean, not that Indiana and Miami are the same, and Vandy, they have access to NIL money. And so they're raiding the JMUs and the New Mexico States right. and the Washington States, and then you throw on top of it the travel now that's involved in some,
correct.
You know, particularly, which is also an evening. It feels like maybe within the Power Five conferences, within them, there is a flattening.
Well, and also, I mean, this is another kind of NFL aspect of it, unbalanced schedules. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, you think about it,
right.
with a school like Alabama, where Alabama, really, Georgia's the one that, like, applies, but, like, Georgia's going to have to play Alabama, Texas, Ole Miss, Tennessee, the first three of those on the road.
Oh my God.
They're all, like, so you know what I mean? Like, it is where you start to see, like, you see this stuff in the NFL more, where it's like, when you start to predict, okay, who's going to be surprised?
Look at the schedules.
Look at the,
right.
schedule, look at the spots. Like,
okay, well, that gets
matter.
Us to Alabama. And it is interesting, of course, that these upsets are happening in a year when upsets are not fatal.
Right.
Right? You're like, we saw this for Ole Miss, lose to Kentucky. We'll get to Ole Miss later in the hour. But Ole Miss lose to Kentucky. It's not fatal. Georgia loses to Alabama.
It might still be fatal to the fan bases,
right,
but yes,
right.
to the teams themselves.
Georgia loses to Alabama last week, not fatal. Alabama loses this week, not fatal. Tennessee, we'll get to that too, loses to Arkansas, not fatal. The problem is, it does then. I mean, you got Alabama, Tennessee in 2 weeks. What it does do is one loss is not fatal, two losses not fatal. At three losses, you start to wonder, right? And Alabama, for example, still has Tennessee, Missouri, LSU, and Oklahoma, okay, on their schedule. Odds are, if you look at all the prognostications, that Alabama will still make the playoff. But they all won't, you know? Like, Tennessee and Alabama, someone's going to lose that game. and Ole Miss and Georgia. Someone's going to look like they all won't make it. It's actually one reason we're going to have the Big Ten and the SEC meeting in Nashville this week. It's one reason they do want four automatic bids in the SEC, because you're going to have these teams beating each other up, and they just want the four. They want four. Make sure there's four teams every year in the playoff.
Bingo.
And this is one of the reasons why.
100% why.
Do you think Alabama has something been exposed? Obviously, they go up the way they do against Georgia, and then in the last six quarters, they give up 60 points. What do we now think about Alabama, particularly as you're looking ahead to the game against Tennessee?
I think what we saw the last six quarters, those that were concerned about the secondary at Alabama had right to be concerned. I think they're still a very good team, and their secondary is going to be young, so it's entirely possible they get better. But I think what we've seen is they're good up front, but they're not like dominant up front. And the secondary, so if you have a team that can kind of scheme up some passing, like they're vulnerable. But that's still a very good team, and offensively, they're still a juggernaut.
We got a lot more college football to talk about. We'll do that in the Fight Song Roundup, which we will do next. Also, as I said, Tigers, Grizz, NFL, baseball, just on and on and on, and a packed weekend of sports. Before then, I will tell you, if you're selling your house, you should call Josh Hysaw, 901-461-8147, 901-461-8147, and his team at Keller Williams Realty. Here's the thing. Right now, I was driving around this weekend, and I just see a lot of houses, a lot of for sale signs, and the houses are just sitting there. And what you need, among other things, experience, all of that, but marketing matters. There's a reason that Coke spends what it does on marketing. And Josh Hysaw, I mean, you hear it right now on the radio. He markets himself. He markets his houses. Jody heard us talking about it, wanted to sell their house, heard us talking about it on the radio. She calls Josh Hysaw, and within a week of listing her home, eight different offers. She told me the hardest part was deciding which offer to take. I'm not promising that's what's going to happen if you call Josh Hysaw, but he's certainly worth a call, 901-461-8147, to take advantage of his aggressive marketing. You can visit him at his phone number or joshhasthebuyers.com. Come back in a moment with the Fight Song Roundup. Jeff Cockatoo, 92.9 FM ESPN.
History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Cockatoo Show. By the way, Cat is Milton now is a Category 4, Jeffrey, officially Category 4. That Memphis game is in peril, wouldn't you say?
I would certainly think it is very much in jeopardy of getting moved.
Of getting
some
moved.
Some form or fashion.
It could, from Friday to Saturday. It could be moved from South Florida to somewhere else.
Right.
We'll see what happens. And obviously, if there's any news on it, we will let you know. All right, let's do the Fight Song Roundup. Yeah, we played it already. We're going to play it again. I was at church yesterday morning. I had a Wild Presbyterian. Noticed a lot of gold ties, Jeffrey.
A few more than you've seen on a normal Sunday.
In fact, someone came up to me and coffee and cookies after the service and said, I think I know what song you're going to be playing in the Fight Song Roundup. And sure enough, we played it once. We will play it again.
Made the cut.
Vandy wins 42-35. But onward we go. What's next? How about that? Sam Pittman lives. Sam Pittman and the Arkansas Razorbacks, 19-14 over Tennessee. And by a hand up, once again, same thing. I confess that when Alabama cut it to 40-35, I assume they'd force a punt, score, and win. And in this one, when Tennessee went up 14-3, I'm like, okay. Well, the first half was a struggle. First half was a struggle. A lot of long drives by Arkansas that didn't go anywhere in particular, but they were up. And then Tennessee righted the ship. They're up 14-3. There's no way Arkansas is going to come back and win this game against this Tennessee defense. And then between the tag team quarterback play, Talen Green one touchdown drive, Malachi Singleton the next. The Tennessee makes the decision to go ahead and let him run in,
let him score,
so they could get the ball back, drive down and win the game. Now I had much less confidence at that point.
But when I'm with you, when it was 14-3,
when
it was 14-3, I was like, all right, Tennessee. The question now is, like, do they cover? Like, they're going to figure out a way to win this game. It's going to be ugly. It's going to be a clunker, but they're going to figure out a way to win. And then especially when Tylan Green got hurt, I was like, okay, well, that's unfortunate. Like, I thought that was going to be kind of a microcosm of the Pittman era that we've seen the last 2 or 3 years where they get super close, but they just
can't
stuff keeps happening to them.
Can't do it. But they did. They did. So, and I was not at all, having watched Nico all game long, I did not actually assume then that Tennessee would drive down and score. I'll be honest, surprised that he held the ball at the end. That one surprised me.
I did not think he was going to pull a Joe Milton.
Didn't think he'd run out of bounds.
Yeah.
With that one on the last play. But it does raise this question. What is Tennessee, and can you win at the highest level with a quarterback who is this young, right? If you look, I saw someone tweeted this out. If you look at the teams that have won national championships, let's go back to Joe Burrow, okay?
All right.
Joe Burrow was a redshirt senior when he won.
Yep.
Next quarterback to win was a Mac Jones, who was a redshirt junior. Next quarterback to win the national championship was Stetson Bennett, who was a fifth-year senior. And before that, it was Stetson Bennett, who was a fourth-year senior. I mean,
fourth-year junior, fifth-year
right,
senior.
Yeah, fourth year.
He might even been a fifth-year junior and a sixth-year senior.
And then you got J.J. McCarthy, who was a junior. He was, a true junior. So,
I can't remember if he was a redshirt, but he, yes.
And then you got Nico. Oop.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's no question this was very much a freshman performance. But he is still playing a lot of football, and I think the idea is, the hope is by the year end, where normally I think young quarterbacks, this type of game would sink Tennessee. Well, this is, I think, the theme that we've kind of been talking about.
If Joe Milton were the quarterback, you'd like, damn it, that's Joe Milton.
Right, but also, losses aren't sinking teams.
Oh, that's 100% true. Yes, that is true. Nothing, but as we watch, in the same way we watch for Alabama, we're like, okay, the loss doesn't sink them. But might their secondary sink them?
Correct.
Right? Here you're looking at it. Okay, the loss doesn't sink Tennessee, but might their secondary? We assumed that it was just that stout Oklahoma defense. Well, now they've scored 25 points and 14 points in the last 2 weeks. And so now you're wondering, well, you tell me, what's the line going to be? Alabama, Tennessee?
Games in Knoxville. I'm betting right now it's probably like Bama 2.5, something like that.
How worried are you if you're Tennessee? It is amazing. Like, you can go from being the genius who saved Tennessee football to getting ripped. And the same thing, Kalen DeBoer a week ago, my God, he was on top of the world. And then you lose to Vandy, and it's let's reevaluate.
No, I mean, I don't know if anyone in a span of 2 weeks has earned that much goodwill and then spent it in 7 days.
And Josh Heupel was taken.
Okay, but like, let's talk about coaching decisions. What would you have done differently? Like, because I guess you can make the argument they shouldn't have let him score, but like, do you really want to force a field goal with no time left? Was the only way to get the ball back.
No, I think you do that. There was a punt in the first half where they were in
plus territory.
Yeah, but in the end, like, I think actually what happened was Arkansas converted on the third down, and that would have worked, but I was not particularly critical. Amari Thomas from Memphis got in some trouble afterwards, or whatever. He misbehaved.
It was a heck of a lick.
I think we can say that. So you have the field storming, and then Amari Thomas just, let's be honest, just flat out flattens the dude, right?
Yeah.
It didn't appear that it was particularly provoked. He has since apologized. And by all accounts, it's like he's been a multiple-time captain. Like, he's a leader of that team.
It's also the classic, man. When you rush the field, you got to realize, like, there's players there, too.
There's players there, too. And these guys, the players are frustrated, you know. It's not an excuse. Can't do it. I apologize for my actions during the chaotic post-game scene. Even though we got run into multiple times by fans, there's a little tucking the excuse in there. Could have left that one out,
I make
Amari.
No excuses, but here's
but
the reason.
Even though we got run into multiple times by fans, not this fan necessarily, while trying to exit the field, that doesn't condone my actions or define my character. I sincerely apologize. I wish Arkansas and their fans all the best. Big O. So there you go.
I know the final score is not reflective. I did think that this win was similar to the Vanderbilt win in this fashion. Arkansas did a fantastic job of playing keep away and frustrating Tennessee.
Absolutely.
And Vanderbilt played keep away while scoring. So that made in, but they were going to need to score, because if they just played keep away and then gave it back to Alabama without scoring, Bama was eventually just going to run away with it. Like, but this one was Arkansas was able to play keep away, and defensively they were able to get enough stops. Like, I just thought it was, I thought it was a great game plan. And
well, and it turns out, much like Arkansas, I mean, Vandy had some losses, close losses. So is Arkansas this year. Neither team is bad, it turns out.
No, I mean, Arkansas is basically two plays away from being undefeated.
Undefeated, easily. All right. How do you bounce back from these bad defeats, Jeffrey?
Trust your defense.
Well, you called this one. Ole Miss beats South Carolina 27-3. It's 24-3 at half. Walter Nolan was all over the place. Two sacks, recovered a fumble. Six sacks in total by Ole Miss. And very efficient in the old red zone, Jeffrey.
Yep. Four for four
trips to the red zone.
Three touchdowns.
Three
touchdowns, one field goal.
That's right. Jackson Dart, 14-27, 285 yards. Did not have a TD.
Yeah, but this was a tough one. So I had Jordan Watkins anytime touchdown.
Mm.
He got to the two, and he got to the one. That and hurt.
He had to be, should have been the big man anytime touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
JJ with two of them.
He is a delight to watch.
He is a delight to watch. And Lenore Sellers was under siege all day. So nice bounce back win for Ole Miss as they now, things get a little more daunting. But Ole Miss can look up and say, see, this can happen. Anyone can have a bad day. Memphis can do that too. Memphis can look up and say, you know what? Anyone can have a bad day. The problem is Memphis doesn't have that same leeway, not with Navy doing what they're Navy. We'll get
schedule
to that.
Schedule doesn't allow for Memphis.
Schedule
to,
doesn't allow for Memphis, and it's not as forgiving in the same way that it is for Ole Miss. But things certainly broke the right way for
Ole Miss. I was watching with my brother, and what I think is obvious is the teams that are going to give Ole Miss problems are the teams that can match up defensively. So if you look at South Carolina, when everyone was worried about, man, see what Kentucky did with that defensive line. Well, South Carolina's defense, they have two great pass rushers, but really beyond that, they don't do anything else particularly well. And where Kentucky deserves a lot of credit for their win is they were very efficient on offense in holding the ball. South Carolina's offense was just unable to make Ole Miss uncomfortable, because you just never thought they were going to put anything together.
All right, who's next? Look who's atop the SEC. Texas A&M smashes Missouri. And who has risen from the ashes?
Connor Wegman?
Much like Sam Pittman, really. Connor Wegman. When last we saw Connor Wegman against Notre Dame, looked much like I would look against Notre Dame. Bounces back with his best performance of his life, 18 of 22, 276 yards. And all of a sudden, that Texas A&M game, Texas, of course, is number one in the world now, number one in the country, undefeated. But Texas A&M, 3-0 in the SEC. Brady Cook, 13 of 31, looking like early season Connor Wegman, really. 13 of 31, 186 yards, but he was sacked six times. Jeffrey, your thoughts?
Yeah, this is the A&M performance that I think makes people not want to quit A&M. Because, like, this was one of those teams that a lot of people were high on coming into the year, and then you saw the Notre Dame performance, and then you saw some of the other performances, and you're just like, all right, they just kind of look like the same thing that they always are. But this was the type of game where you go, oh, yeah, this is what I was kind of banking on. And I kind of was high on Wegman coming into the season. He's been banged up. It's the best game of his life.
Best game of his life.
It was an odd game in this sense that Missouri won the toss, took the ball, and you're like, okay, that's something you don't normally see. Right. And you realized Missouri was like, we are going to have to start fast because if this, I think they were worried about this result. And they get a pass interference call that gets wiped away.
Yeah, that one is, and it felt like they just were totally
shell shocked
by that call.
Correct. And then A&M from that point, like you just saw, they just moved the whole line of scrimmage. Like it was just both sides of the ball, they were just completely and utterly dominant.
All right. Who's next?
I have a confession, Jeff.
What's your confession?
I went to bed at 38:10.
Oh, you did. I was watching The Roots. Was it 38:10, 35:10?
I thought it was 38:10. Let me pull up the...
So,
35,
first of all,
you're right. 35:10. Yes. It was 38:18.
Right. So, first, quite a scene game day at Cal.
Absolutely. Shout out to the Bears.
It was tremendous. And the signs, as
good
you might
signs,
have
yeah.
expected, let's see, you had, I thought this was a protest.
Mm-hmm.
You had, I only do lines of code.
Mm-hmm. That was a good one.
You people are blocking the library.
Mm-hmm.
It was a mob out there. Cal wanted game day. Cal got game day. And it was a great scene. And up 35-10, it felt like it would be a triumphant day for Cal. Much like when game day came to Beale Street.
Yeah, absolutely.
A show. Put on a show during the day. Win the game in thrilling fashion at night. You're up 35-10. How do you lose that game? Cam Ward was insane. In the fourth quarter, 277 yards of offense in the fourth quarter. Here are his last four drives, or Miami's last four drives. 12 plays, 75 yards, touchdown. 11 plays, 75 yards, touchdown. 9 plays, 70 yards, touchdown. 6 plays, 92 yards, touchdown.
So Cam Ward in the fourth quarter alone was 15 of 22 for 238, 2 touchdowns, no interceptions. We just got done talking about how awesome Connor Wegman played. Connor Wegman was 18 of 22 for 276, no touchdowns, no interceptions, for the whole game.
Now
that was Cam's fourth quarter.
If you
he did also have one of the worst interceptions of the year.
I had to go back and see this. There was Cal was up 38-31.
Yeah.
So Miami got the benefit of the Hail Mary against Virginia Tech, right?
Yes.
Call it there. Cal's up 38-31, and there is a clear targeting that should have extended a drive and did not. And so Miami comes back. Miami wins the game. And now you've got Miami, two close escapes. Is this the mark of a good team, Jeffrey? Is that what good teams do? They win, they figure out a way to win? Or is this like Memphis basketball last year where the wins are covering up the flaws?
So I think it's closer to signs of a good team because what we're seeing is good teams are playing close games and losing a little bit. They are still winning. Like, to me, that's kind of the thing that'll be interesting is we'll finally see Ohio State get a test. But, like, part of the reason why I think the only team that I really, truly, honestly believe in the SEC is Texas right now, because Texas doesn't really, they don't really, like, fart around. You know what I mean?
Other teams we could celebrate. Before we blow someone up, let's discuss some other teams worthy of celebration. Indiana, we mentioned earlier.
First team bowl eligible.
Beat Northwestern. Fifth straight win with scoring 40 or more. Curtis Rourke, Heisman.
The Maple Missile.
25 of 33, 380 yards. So there you go. Ohio State, like, whatever. They just look great. They look great. They ran for 203 yards against Iowa, you know. And Jeremiah Smith had caught another one-hand ridiculous. So, Washington, Michigan, the rematch.
Yep.
It's weird how unlike a rematch that felt. When everyone's gone from the previous team, and then Michigan trots out, thinks they've discovered something, in Jack Tuttle, seventh-year senior, actually briefly took the lead, and then Jack Tuttle was Jack Tuttle. And Michigan just is not good offensively at all. But shout out to Washington. That must have felt good, right? Certainly, you would.
It is hilarious to hear seventh-year senior and you find out the kid is not a doctor.
Right. Yes. Kid is not a doctor. We saw Syracuse beat UNLV in OT.
A lot of whining from Vegas.
So a lot of whining from Vegas. Friday nights have been good, though. You know, Friday nights have been good. Anything else stand out? One of the things that's been interesting is we didn't do Minnesota USC.
Yeah.
I lament that. Yes, Minnesota.
I didn't have a lot of eyes on that one. That was kind of scoreboard watching, and then I would see kind of break-ins. I just didn't see a ton of that because there was so much else going on.
And that brings up what I mentioned earlier, that this traveling, and you've talked about this before, it is a huge disadvantage to the team that is traveling. So in the Big Ten, there's been 9 games where there's between one team has to travel 2 time zones. Okay? So far, 9 games. The visiting team is 1-8 in those games. Yeah. This one most recently. So honestly, it's and again, you go back to Ed Scott talking about Memphis playing in the pack, and he said we would have one arm tied behind our back, right?
I mean, I feel like I really hammer this home, like, from a competitive standpoint. I guess you get home games and whatnot, but, like, it does wear on you.
Yeah. I mean, it very clearly is having an impact. There's no question.
Oh, we could have shout out SMU.
Could have shout out SMU. SMU beating Louisville 34-27. Made the quarterback changes, made all the difference in the world for SMU. That was an electric game.
Yep.
All right, let's blow someone up. All right, I want to talk a little about American here, partly. But this is the UAB fight song. Have we ever played it before?
We at least had it in the system, so at some point I think we've played it.
Tulane beat the hell out of UAB. 71-20.
Yeah, I'm upset that this was not on the card because this was a free space. I don't know why I got worried about the line.
Tulane ran for 317 yards.
6 touchdowns.
And 6 touchdowns. But the reason I do blow up UAB is, in addition to you gave up 71 points to Tulane, it seems like on its face, reason to be blown up. Trent Dilfer, this is not going well.
No.
5-12, 320 or more points losses this year. And do you remember when UAB had an interim coach? Remember that? They had an interim coach who they did not keep. To Bryant Vincent is his name.
Yes.
He's gone on to Louisiana Monroe.
Yeah.
And Louisiana and Monroe beat James Madison this week.
Mm-hmm.
Remember we talked about one of these teams going to lose. Is UNLV going to lose? It turns out they did. James Madison going to lose? Turns out they did. Louisiana Monroe beat James Madison 29-19. The Trent Dilfer experiment not going well. And we could also, honestly, if the AAC had a fight song, we could blow up the AAC for doing what they've done with Army and Navy because they are on a collision course, Jeffrey. Navy beats Air Force 34-7. They run for 329 yards. Blake Horvath does Blake Horvath things. Army destroys Tulsa 49-7, averaging 8 yards a rush. As we've pointed out, Army has a totally cake schedule. Navy looks awesome and would have to lose twice for Memphis to pass them. It does appear you could very well have Army and Navy playing and then playing again.
Yes.
Playing in the championship
playing
game.
Playing in the championship game and then having the Army-Navy.
And by the way, the way
and
it works
then you would
is,
have to wait on the playoff potentially.
Is that how it works? Or do they pick the playoff after the championship games? And then you could go
and
lose?
I think there's a... If that game has any impact...
then they wait?
Correct.
Are you sure? Have you read that?
Tim Murray and I were talking about this last week, that there's the potential that they would have to figure out what to do.
But right now, that is not the schedule. The schedule is to play the AAC championship game and then to... Now, mind you, Boise State could take care of this, right? I mean, Tulane does have two losses already, right? So if it's... I mean, if it's Tulane, for example, it makes it, and very well could. Tulane could be the best team in the AAC. That's possible, don't you think?
Yes.
That would save everybody if Tulane makes the championship game.
Okay. So both teams could finish, this is from Brett McMurphy, both teams could finish 10-1 in either school or both schools advancing to the AAC championship game on December the 6th. If Army or Navy wins the AAC title, it would be in contention for the Group of Five's playoff berth, especially at 11-1, and would be a lock at 12-0 with a win versus Notre Dame. The college football playoff field would then be announced on December 8th. The nightmare scenario for the CFP would be Army or Navy wins the AAC, qualifies for the college football playoff as the highest rank. So, yes, I think
yes,
you're right.
They go ahead. They play it. They do it, and then you lose, and then you go rep. It's not a nightmare for the AAC. It's a nightmare for the playoff. Because you are then taking an Army or Navy team that made the playoff
right.
And will be in the playoff. Let's say Navy then loses the Army-Navy game to Army, and then they're still in the playoff. It's a nightmare for the playoff. And it's stupid, by the way. The whole thing's just stupid that the AAC took these teams without insisting
to
be a conference
playoff,
game.
Then hey, at least everybody gets rich.
Yes, then everybody gets some money. Yeah, then everybody gets some money. All right, anyone else that you want to call attention to for their work this past weekend? We had Oklahoma State suffering an embarrassing loss. We could have.
They're broken.
We could have blown up Oklahoma State. Ollie Gordon looked like he was sort of gimpy there, and it's a question whether you just shut it down if you're Ollie Gordon. West Virginia run 65 times for 389 yards in beating Oklahoma State. Sadly, Florida State lost again.
I'd like to shout out Kenny Dillingham.
I
don't think that team is very good at all, but like they play hard and he's doing like a master class of coaching. Like he's just in his bag. He's got like two or three guys on offense and they just keep finding ways. So shout out to them. That was a fun game.
All right, we're going to take a break. Chris Harrington's going to join us on the other side. Then we have a million other things to talk about in the last segment. We'll try to avoid talking about the Buffalo Bills. We may be forced to. Before that, I'll tell you, I bought some art this weekend, and some of it needs framing. So I need to head over to Frame Corner Memphis right there, 5035 Park Avenue, framecornermemphis.com. You can walk in, you can buy a frame, but what they're really great at is custom framing. So if you've got sports memorabilia, if you got concert tickets and a program, if you've got, as someone who I know used them recently, your grandfather's Arrowhead collection, whatever it is that you need framed, saved forever, so you could display and hand down, that's what they do at the Frame Corner. They're an expert at custom framing. 5035 Park Avenue, framecornermemphis.com. Chris Harrington joins us on the other side. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Football is fun. Why shouldn't your football podcast be the same?
Follow and listen to Heed the Call NFL podcast with Dan Hanzus and Mark Sessler wherever you get your podcasts.